Hey, everybody. We are talking about baldies. I'm not sure what order these will come out in, so we'll just fuck it. Go right into it. This category is meta. These are things that are trends we see affecting the entertainment landscape and what
I mean, it's just honestly, it's like
it.
Shit that I wanted to talk about that has no
it's,
place.
It's talking about podcasting
anywhere else.
It's talking about television and movie coverage, pop culture coverage.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's why it's called meta.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. What's the so you like binge mode better than Beyond Stranger Things or
oh we have
to
rank them? Yeah,
them
I definitely think we should put Amazon movies below Netflix movies.
So I think you're the one that really want to talk about Beyond Stranger Things / Talking Dead. I've got some thoughts on it as well. I want to hear your opening salvo.
Yeah, I mean it was something I watched this year, not Talking Dead. Let's get that straight. I watched Beyond Stranger Things.
I did watch half of a Talking Dead.
It's true. I watched about a minute and a half of each one after our live watches. But I watched the entirety of Beyond Stranger Things, and I mostly enjoyed it. Like those shows are always like a little dubious to me as far as their quality and their value.
Right.
But when you have something like Beyond Stranger Things where the actors are there to just kind of get together and talk about the show, I feel like that's kind of cool. Whereas Talking Dead is more of like, it feels more for the fans, which is weird to say because I know Beyond Stranger Things is too, but Talking Dead, it almost feels like they're talking to the fans instead of having a conversation with themselves.
Yeah.
To me, or it's more of a, it has more of a farce quality to it.
To me, Beyond Stranger Things has the feel of a Blu-ray extra.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Talking Dead is more just,
it feels like marketing. It just feels like straight up marketing to me.
Or so I've long said that I think where all of this pop culture, entertainment, and criticism is going is the ESPN model, where like Talking Dead is going to be seen as like the big after show game or the big after game show. You know, we've just won or someone's just lost, and we're going to talk about it and how that impacts things and how that changes our understanding of the league, and we're going to bloviate and we're going to have obvious opinions, we're going to shout at each other, and we're going to piss off a lot of fans, we're going to delight others, and we're just going to just generate a maximum media entertainment. And then I think Beyond Stranger Things is like ESPN, not a documentary, but when they like sit down and have interviews with a quarterback or the defensive coordinator, the head coach, and they try to get like in a little deeper.
Yeah.
You know, it's actually more informative and less in the moment.
Right.
And I think there's room for both of those. And I think Bald Move fits in as part of that. But like, yeah, I think that it would not surprise me if in 10 years there is an entertainment network, and maybe it's on YouTube, maybe it's not on cable, that is 24/7 talking about television. There's reality, there's a reality hour, there's a drama hour, there's a comedy hour, there's a what's coming. There's every show has a 30-minute after show. Like I think that'll I don't see what's going to stop that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'm trying to figure out where that fits into like our coverage of television.
We are
like, do we cover the shows that cover shows like that?
I think we are those shows, but we
certainly to a degree.
But,
yeah,
but we don't fit into either one of those because we are. It's because this is something. This is something that doesn't that ESPN doesn't really have, the whole like 2 days after the big game, let's have two knowledgeable fans break down the film footage and say what works, what doesn't. Now that's a show I would fucking watch. Like I feel like they have access to the coaches' cam. They're not coaches. They're not insiders. They're not former players. Although maybe they can provide. But two fans that are students of the game break it down at that kind of intermediate level understanding.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the scary thing is, why hasn't ESPN done something like that? Is it because the NFL doesn't want to cooperate? It's because they're secretive and insiderish? Is it because the outsider's view is just not that important in the grand scheme of things? But I think it's weird because like outsider's view of politics, outsider's view of science, all that other stuff is like has almost no value at all. But entertainment is so low stakes and so accessible, I almost think it does.
Yeah, it's weird to me. Like I'm trying to compare this to the way that other award shows do it, because like let's say there are 15 of these, right? There's mm-hmm. one for every single show that we cover throughout the year. Do we have at some point a category that is like best after show, best talk show based on a show? And I guess I would see that as like a useful, warranted thing, but like
I don't
ever see anybody doing that. Like if you look at like Games Awards and stuff, right? Mm-hmm. They don't really honor like best studio or best publisher
they
for
don't?
The year or whatever.
But they surely there's got to be
they
a category
honor, like,
for
best games
journalism or best new YouTube series or like Giant Bomb has never won the award for like video game coverage.
I don't
or...
think anybody does that kind of stuff. No, like awarding the people who covered the.
What's well, weird
it,
about
this
it
is weirder because it's not even like the people who are covering it, right? It's
but that's because at some level you get. You get to where it's not turtles all the way down, right?
Uh-huh.
So let's say they do the best show about a show.
Yeah.
Then is there a best show about the show that's about the show? And who judges
that? But nobody's
that?
Right. Nobody's covering Beyond Stranger Things and talking about like that show in detail.
No, but there
maybe
is maybe
eventually someone does. But
I know because you know we've got a lot of like. Just like people have inspired us, like Bill Simmons and Jay and Jack kind of inspired us. We've inspired others, and I've become aware of a meta level of fandom where you know they discuss our opinions about the show in like groups and stuff. And we, you know, hell, we have one in the forums, and that's always surreal to see people debating what I meant about my comments and stuff. But like, I feel like. It would almost have to be a people's choice because the second you started like could there be a podcast about the Walking Dead podcast? Could there be a podcast about the Game of Thrones podcast?
Well, I think there's got to be a hierarchy, right? Like we wouldn't be the ones awarding best podcast on a TV
right. That's
show.
That's where I was getting
It'd
at.
It'd be
yeah.
the next in line would be like best podcast on a TV show.
Yeah.
And there are lists out there already.
That. Yeah, like there's a podcast awards and they have those categories.
Right. But nobody's talking about like, oh, what's the best after show yet? And that's kind of where my head's at going into the new year where we may see, you know, we see a lot of these things. Because
You got AfterBuzz.
You got the Mr. Robot after show.
You got the Mr. Yeah. But those, see, and you also have to draw a distinction between the ones that are official and the ones that are unofficial.
Right.
Because I think that the official ones have more access, but frequently the unofficial ones are more interesting. Now, that's my bias because I'm an unofficial.
Well, I think they are necessarily less biased. I mean, I don't think that any network is going to let you get on the screen on their airtime and say, fuck USA, they made a terrible Mr. Robot season, or fuck The Walking Dead.
Did anyone ever, in Beyond Stranger Things, probably not because I'm sure they recorded that, they had to record it in advance of the release of the season, but was there any discussion about the seventh episode and how that was such a fundamentally change of, because I watched the first four and I stopped.
Talk about how different it is, but they don't talk... They probably wouldn't, even if they had this kind of like foresight, be able to talk about like how the fans reacted to it.
Yeah. See, because I think that's, to me, a miss. Like if I was the
but that's not
the principal,
their job,
if I was the dean.
Right.
I think one of the jobs, my jobs would be is like, okay, this is before, I mean, it's hard to do with Talking Dead because it's already out and people are reacting on Twitter and everything. But like it's this laboratory experiment where it hasn't been unleashed. You guys knew you took a risk, or you knew you broke the format, or you made a tough editing choice when you decided to not thread this and make it its own.
Yeah.
Like, what do you guys think about? Were you worried at all? Were you like, and I would like to hear that before it's tainted by any outside information. Like, what all, or because sometimes I think everything's maybe cocksure and they just made these decisions, but I bet a lot of times those decisions are kind of torturous because it's kind of like when we make internal decisions about Bald Move, like, fuck, it's just us two. We try to make our best guess and we put it out there and it either sinks or swims. But, you know, I'm sure the Duffer Brothers take Stranger Things at least as seriously as we do the Bald Move business.
Sure. Yeah, I would hope so.
And the other thing is like, it's interesting that after shows about things that are universally lauded are easier than after shows about things that are divisive.
Absolutely.
Because, like, if Stranger Things were a worse show, their glibness and self-congratulations and cute stories on a set would seem saccharine and jarring rather than, oh, look at these kids. They're so cute. And, oh, it's their first kid. And, like, you know.
Yeah, no, it's the contrast between Talking Dead, and it's kind of why I mentioned these two. Beyond Stranger Things, and Talking Dead could not be more different in that regard.
Yeah.
Like, everybody involved in The Walking Dead, in Talking Dead,
right,
knows that the fans are unhappy, by and large, with the show they're making. And yet they pretend as if nothing is wrong.
Another comparison is if you look at the behind-the-scenes information about the prequel trilogy of Star Wars versus the behind-the-scenes documentaries about the, like, the Lord of the Rings trilogy.
Uh-huh.
Like, even though this is an official thing that was produced by Lucasfilm, like, there is quiet desperation all over the fucking place.
Right.
You can't hide it
with editing.
You can see it when you film George coming through and stamping alien face designs, you can see in the artist's faces, and then you compare that with the guy who's, like, joyously grinding his 1100th orc sword, and, you know, it's like... Yeah, you can't hide it. If you do any kind of behind the scenes stuff, you're going to catch that. Like, you're going to catch those whiffs of, oh, this might not have been the most fun thing to work on, or just like I think you can see in the tightness of Chris Hardwick's eyes sometimes.
Sure,
whole like, oh God, I'm willingly putting myself in this stockade for tomatoes and stones to hit my face. All right, where do you think?
I'm just trying to figure out, does it have a future as a category? Because there are going to be more and more of these. I know of at least three this year, a couple of which one of which I thought was good and two of which I thought were marginal.
Can I have a selfish opinion?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
I don't want it ever to be a Bald Move category because I don't want to commit to watching this shit.
Okay. Yeah.
Like, maybe it could be a user category, but I want to have the freedom that if I really enjoy something, and as a fan, because that's the other thing, is like the difference between us and like critics is I don't have to watch every fucking screener that someone sends me.
I was gonna say that's the good thing about the Baldies is you don't.
Like, right.
This is not about like what was the best on TV this year.
Am I ever going to see it a year? I mean, I don't know because I listen to a lot of podcasts. Right. But what I found is the deeper I get into Bald Move, the less podcasts I listen to about. Like general pop culture, and the more I get into other side interests that have nothing to do because I spend 40 plus hours a week watching, engaging, reading pop culture takes. So like in my free time, so I don't know. Like I can't see a year where we'd have more. It's kind of like the documentaries. Sometimes maybe it's one of those categories where in a year where there's a lot of interesting after shows, we can talk about it. But then if we haven't watched a bunch, then it just kind of submarines and goes away.
Sure.
I don't want to make it like a best drama, a Baldi's drama, where like every fucking year we have to crown a winner and there's a field of 20 or 30 that go through. And so,
yeah, I guess it gets more conspicuous that we're not doing it as more of these shows come up, though.
Yeah.
It's kind of like if we just sort of stuck with the weekly format, even though Netflix was dropping seasons at a time. It would get more and more conspicuous that we're behind the times.
Right, right.
I want to keep ahead of this stuff and, like, figure out how to address it. And, you know, maybe that's a question for, like, when Bald Move starts growing, when we have more employees that can, you know, contribute to the Baldies instead of just us two having to do it all.
Yeah, that would be ultimately, that's the answer for a lot of these things. The fact.
It's an answer, but it raises a lot of questions too. Like, how do we determine the winner when
who gets
multiple people are voting, and some of us and the majority of us haven't seen a show? And
but that's I mean, honestly, that's one of the problems with like the Oscars and the Emmys is that you've got this. Theoretically, the Oscars and Emmys should be the most relevant because it's the people insider in the industries that are like, you know, people making high art, judging other high art. But in practice, you get a bunch of busy, overworked people that don't have time to watch anything in the current zeitgeist because they're busy making, you know, whatever, the latest Paul Thomas Anderson movie or whatever. Or you've got has-beens that are out of touch and, you know, and there's money. By the way, should we make, I mean, that we'll say that for an intro, but we still have not received a bag of money.
We have not received a bag of money.
There's the canary in the bank vault.
Right. Maybe next year is the year where here's what I know is going to happen. We're going to forget to say it one year.
It's not going to be
because we're taking money.
I can't wait. I'm like, yeah. Someone can write a tell-all book about the spreading corruption of
Bald
Move.
We're going to have some fires to put out.
We talked a little about binge mode over the year, but do we want to talk about binge mode as a pop culture phenomenon? If you don't know, Binge Mode is a podcast that Jason and Mallory over at The Ringer, which is Bill Simmons' newest media enterprise, they were often appearing on the short-lived After the Throne show on HBO.
Oh, shit, that was another one.
He was the... Well, it got axed last year. He was the maester on The Ringer. And they did a... Where the story that I've heard is that they essentially locked themselves in a conference room in the Ringer hall, in the Ringer office, and literally binged Game of Thrones and recorded a podcast for every episode. And they did in the off-season leading up to season 7. Is this a thing? Is this a thing that can be easy? Because, you know, one of the things that we found, one of the principles we found on A Bald Move was identify how other people could eat our lunch and try to get at the table first.
So this is
a potential way that people could eat our lunch. Mm-hmm. Is it? Nah. Is it something we need to worry about? Is it something that can be replicated?
It's something different from what we're doing, certainly. But I think there are pros and cons to this thing, right?
Yeah.
Like, the pro to me is that it provides potentially better coverage as you go through the season. So, like, this year we did season 2 in retrospect of Game of Thrones, right?
Yeah, we did the rewatch.
And we went through, and I watched every episode of season 2, and we did a podcast on it, but fuck me if I remember when things happen or what has already happened at that point, right? Mm-hmm. But we watched season 1 a year ago. Mm-hmm. Between then, I've watched season 7. Now I'm going back to season 2. It's all kinds of fucked up. And in my head, I can't keep anything straight. Hmm. So the thing that binge mode in my mind has going for it is that it provides continuity, I guess, for the podcasters. And you can go like when we do the Stranger Things binge mode stuff, I end up feeling like I've done a better job covering the series because I have all of it fresh in my mind.
Right.
Especially this year when we did season 1 right into season 2.
Right.
I was like, okay, I know everything about this show. Yeah.
Yeah. If someone asked you to write down a timeline. But do you think...
Right.
I mean, because I want to push back a little bit on that. You really don't think you'd remember what season Battle of the Blackwater happened or what season the Red Wedding happened or...
Because
I've got like big...
Not those things, but the minor things. Like, yes, the big milestone benchmark episode,
right.
Sure. Like, Hardhome, okay, I know when that happened.
But when Varys,
if you're asking me, when Littlefinger,
when
like,
does Varys
did this
recruit
thing,
Roz into his
I don't fucking know.
Spy network?
No fucking idea.
Yeah.
So, it's not the big things, obviously. It's the little things.
Yeah. And the little things are what
usually...
Which
add a lot of color to your
conversation. Yeah, and then the little things are what, you know, you get nailed on for being a supposed subject matter expert and failing on.
Mm-hmm. So I think it has that advantage and it has others.
But the other thing is like, I think it's one of those lightning in the bottle type situations where the Ringer was a relatively new enterprise. These were relatively new talents and they had a single passion. Like this guy and gal were really geeked about Game of Thrones, had a very deep knowledge and they had a lot of fun doing it together. Now they're doing binge mode weekly.
Mm-hmm.
So now they're in the pop culture potpourri lane. How the hell are they ever going to do another binge mode? I mean, I've heard that they are going to do another binge mode, but it's one of those things where...
You can't do it on the same show. And
it's like you either have to keep Jason... You either have to keep Jason and Mallory as the binge mode team.
Uh-huh.
And they're detached. They're like a special forces thing where they just drop in and they consume 4 seasons of television. Like, they could do a binge mode of Mr. Robot. That actually might be what they're doing. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Or they could, you know, in a couple seasons do a binge mode Westworld or whatever. And then they're always free to do that. But the problem with that is, are Jason and Mallory as geeked about Mr. Robot as they are about Game of Thrones? Or... They start, you know, like since there's not another Game of Thrones that they can binge mode all the time, they have to start picking their poison and, like, you know, start just covering general sci-fi fantasy, and then they're less free to do the binge mode stuff. It's the same thing, like, you know, Bald Move kind of gets in, like, the weekly stuff gets in the way of the longer term big picture things you want to do, especially when your team is small. So, like, mm-hmm. I don't know that it's replicatable because you can't just take, I mean, that's... You can't just take several random fans, or maybe not even fans, some random personalities, and tell them, hey, do a deep dive on this series.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's kind of like the AfterBuzz approach, and it's like, eh. And you also can't take two people that are passionate about a single subject and then throw them on either a different subject or a semi-related subject and be like, hey, you love Star Wars, now do a deep dive on Star Trek. Now do a deep dive on Battlestar Galactica. Now do a deep dive on The Expanse. Like, okay.
And you also can't re-binge the same show that you are passionate
right.
about.
Right.
Because what the fuck does that look like?
Right.
Every season we're going to re-binge the whole series.
And that's the other, yeah, you, and you also like, so now do they go through, I mean, I know they did season 7, but like when season 8 comes back.
Now they're just a weekly show like us.
Their continuity yeah. has been broken, so.
Their format's gone. After the fact, a binge mode podcast becomes just a regular podcast, right? Because
yes.
all of our back catalog is bingeable. You right. can sit down and you could binge every single episode.
It's not
back to
the
back to back.
The thing it misses is it doesn't have the like the backward
about.
Looking and forward looking throughout the whole yeah. like what lives and breathes throughout the whole thing. But then again, unless you're doing that on a show that already has aired, which is going
right.
to be not as popular.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's one of those weird edge cases because way back when we were first doing Bald Move professionally, I had this idea of this pop culture college where. A person would sit and make 10 to 15 minute supercuts of seasons of television that would give you the bare minimum in a very fast and entertaining way of the plot points and the character development. So theoretically, the main use is going to be like cliff notes. Okay, a new season's about to start. It's been 18 months since you saw the last one, so watch this hour and 15 minutes, and you will be fully refreshed to enjoy it at maximum. The other use case was like, I am 8 seasons behind on Game of Thrones. All my friends talk about Game of Thrones. I want to know enough to talk about it intelligently. I'm going to use the cliff notes to cheat. And then, you know, there's all kinds of edge cases. But I feel like that's a little bit related to binge mode. Binge mode just took it to an nth degree because...
Except they did long form stuff.
They did long form, which the drawback of that is... I think
not bingeable.
Right. Binge mode only appeals to the super hardcore fans.
Well, I misspoke. It is very bingeable. You can listen back to back to back to back, but it will take you a very long time.
It's not compressed, right.
To get through it, right.
Right.
So I don't know. I mean, there are two different approaches, obviously. But I think, yes, like financially, I'm curious to see what binge mode does because... that's a format that kind of lends itself to flash in the pan kind of feeling. Like you fire up a new show on the last season of, you know, let's do a binge mode for the final season of this show.
Mm-hmm.
We caught all these new listeners. Awesome. Mm-hmm. Oh, wait, yeah, that was the last season of the show.
Right.
Shit, all of our listeners are gone now when we move on to our new show.
Right.
Because they don't care about The Sopranos or... Battlestar Galactica. Whatever.
And if we pick a new show to get them excited,
then you
about,
can't binge it. Like, what are you going to do?
And if you get a new show, just like I said, are these people the audience? Because like, that's the thing.
Right.
Like, you
they
know,
might
a lot
not
of people,
come along with you.
Hey, I like Jim and Aaron. I want them to cover my favorite TV show. Well, Jim and Aaron doesn't give a shit necessarily about your favorite TV show.
They give a shit about their favorite TV show.
Exactly. And,
yeah.
And like, if you want to come along with this, great. But a lot of time, a lot of time we shed massive amounts of audience when we move from one show to the other.
Yeah.
It's a very small core nucleus of people probably watching this video that like follow us no matter, you know, where we go. So it's definitely a cool concept. It was lightning in a bottle. It was very exciting. I was very happy for Jason and Mallory to seem like decent people. And I actually listened to a few because that's, you know, before Game of Thrones started, I had a little bit of time and I tried to try out the field. And I thought it was pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, how can we roll that into Bald Move? That's a little bit tougher.
Yeah, I mean, it's I don't know, that binge mode idea where you go back and watch like a lot of episodes of a show, I don't think will work for us because A, we don't have the time. We're but two people. And B, we just don't do a lot of back catalog coverage, right? Like we at most will like binge a season to get caught up to season 2 because we missed a show that was awesome in its debut and it just wasn't on our radar, you know.
Right. And that
like Stranger Things, we did that, we went back and binged it, but that was one season and it was kind of the exception to the rule. So I don't know if like binging 5 seasons of a thing will or of a show will ever be a thing for us.
Yeah. What to do? I'm assuming we're ready to move on.
Yeah.
What
yeah,
to do about Netflix/Amazon movies?
That's so, tough. Well, with Amazon movies, you can just ignore them, pretty much. What is it about Amazon that just isn't hitting the zeitgeist like Netflix?
Well,
because I don't think Amazon has had bad shows.
No,
I think
and
it's
I've
just
heard,
not.
There's a lot of them that get like you know a lot of well-regarded
High
buzz.
Man in the High Castle.
Man in the High Castle.
One, yeah.
Transparent.
Right. Transparent.
what... So I don't know that's fair. It certainly hasn't captured our imagination, and I think it's because there is a limited amount of sources that you can pay attention to.
Sure.
For example, I really liked American Gods on Stars. Ask me the last time I watched Stars. This season finale of season one, American. So, like, if Stars has something new and awesome, I have to hear about it from the Sepinwalds, the Greenwalds, the Bald Move fans of the world, or yeah. I'm not, because they didn't convert me into a watcher. And the same thing with Amazon. Amazon is what I do hit up when I want to watch something for a commissioned podcast.
Yeah, because and I'm renting something.
I mean, we've thought about, like, it's been on our, like, big strategic board that, you know, this is a unique thing we could do. Like, when they have these pilots debut, we could go through and watch these five shows and have an opinion on it.
Yeah, and be the tastemakers on that kind of stuff.
But the problem is, like, I don't know that there's value for guys that watch a pilot and opine on it and then never follow up or do anything with it, because...
I mean, that's kind of what Amazon is doing itself, right? When they do this pilot season,
yeah,
they're inviting people to have an opinion on the show.
Right.
And to give them that opinion. Yeah, so I feel like it's kind of set up to do that. We can just get on there, we can watch a single pilot for a show and just say what we think of the show, and then if it comes back and we thought it was awesome, maybe continue from there. But I kind of like the idea of us, you know, getting into the pilot game, because it's something that Amazon does that's sort of unique. Netflix never airs pilots before the show.
Do you know why? I think it's because Netflix is the one that Amazon's chasing.
What does that have to do with Netflix not doing it?
Because Netflix doesn't feel like they need to. Amazon is doing this because they are trying to get a buzz around. Like, they are like, please watch our shows and talk about it. Mm. Where Netflix is like, we got these shows, you're going to talk about it. Like, it's the confidence of an established brand that is got a fire going that they're pouring gas on versus Amazon that's rubbing two sticks together and trying to make spark. And again, that's an imperfect analogy, because there are fans. They have appeals, but And I could be wrong on this, but I feel like that the Amazon stuff is not quite as big as the Netflix stuff, in the way that Netflix stuff isn't quite as big as the HBO stuff. And
I think it's funny that we haven't mentioned Hulu yet, which is kind of the other player who's trying to do the Netflix thing and is failing as much as Amazon is.
Well, we'll see, because what I've seen Hulu do is make a bunch of first seasons of decent stuff and then having trouble following up on that.
Yeah.
We'll see if they do better with The Handmaid's Tale. But, yeah, I mean, is Hulu behind Amazon? Probably, I guess. I don't know. But they also had, in a way that I don't know that Amazon has ever had, they had a pretty consensus top 10 show this year, if I'm looking across all the different media outlets and them doing their year end in Handmaid's Tale, where Amazon, like Manhattan has always talked about, it's like, oh, it's a really good show. Is it anybody's top 10? I don't think it's ever been. Top of the Lake for Hulu. Season 2, is that making consistently people's top 10 lists? I haven't seen it.
I've seen it on one.
Who?
Andy Greenwald.
Oh, okay. All right.
I know you love him. Yeah,
I know he's my favorite. I don't know. I don't know.
But I guess specifically,
we haven't even talked about
movies.
The actual issue. Yeah.
So, well, I mean, how to deal with like Amazon Netflix kind of stuff is part of the issue. But yes, the movies.
This is a new thing that even as Netflix has started making movies, and some of them like Gerald's Game.
Amazon's been making movies for a while.
1922 were pretty good and well received. Mm-hmm. Do we lump them in with movies? Do we lump them with TV?
Yeah, it's tough.
Are they made for TV movies? That's damning with faint praise.
So you're saying, like, do we lump them in the drama category or some kind of secondary category like we do with movies currently?
Because
we don't put any movies in contention for best drama.
Right.
So...
we also don't. So here's the argument, I guess. We don't separate comedies from drama in movies. As a consequence, no comedy will probably win a Baldy in a movie category, because we... we have seen that no matter how good a comedy is, when it goes up against the best of the dramas, for whatever reason, we assign those heightened emotions of drama better than side-splitting hilarious emotions of comedy.
Sure.
So and the same thing with, like, why do we divide? In a perfect world, you wouldn't divide best male and female actor.
Mm-hmm.
But in a world where the majority of the roles go, like, the juicy dramatic roles have traditionally gone to men, it seems unfair to make women run that gauntlet when, you know, in a world where 50-50 of the big hits have a male or female lead, then maybe we can stop doing that. We're a ways away from that. Like, the same way we have to handicap comedy versus drama, it feels unfair, as good as Gerald's Game is, to put it in a category where you have $200 million blockbusters and... But why can't it, like...
Yeah, you said they're essentially made for TV movies, but better quality.
Yeah, like Moonlight last year was an indie darling. I'm sure its budget was modest. I'm talking out my ass, but if it was more than $10 million, I'd be shocked. Its lead was the third or fourth banana on House of Cards. Mm-hmm. And he was the second villain on Luke Cage. Like, I think that... What I'm saying is Moonlight could have been a Netflix movie. It could have been an Amazon movie, but if it was, would it have won an Oscar? Because it also doesn't have that machine behind it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it...
And since we're more of a fan critic cast than a professional cast, like, we feed on that machine as much as anything, because someone can make the best fucking movie of all time. If it didn't have an advertising campaign where people started talking about it and we started seeing it, we'd never watch it.
Right.
So I really don't, like, again, Gerald's Game, 1922, great horror films. They were great, released at a good time in the year. None of them are going to hit a top 10 movie list, but, like, there'll come a day where they do. But I really don't know what to do with them. It feels unfair to put him in television. It feels unfair to put him in the movies. And it feels arbitrarily second class to call them made for TV movies.
Well, arbitrarily second class, I don't know, because, like, you made what I consider an apt comparison between us and professionals, right? We simply do not have the resources to make something that a professional studio could make.
Right.
So in that sense, I don't think it's arbitrary. I think, like, the reason you have, like, you know, in sports, amateur leagues and professional leagues is because the amateurs just don't have the time or the money to devote all of their skills and resources to this one thing. So they're never going to be as good. It's just not possible. And I'm not saying you have to have a huge budget to make an amazing film. I'm simply saying the hurdle is to have a studio behind you
to get to the Sundances, to get to the Cannes, to get to...
Sure. To get the exposure.
Yeah, right. Or it goes nowhere.
Yeah, so, like, I don't know that it's an arbitrary decision to break up, like, big budget Hollywood movies versus, like, smaller budget Netflix, Amazon, you know, made for TV kind of stuff.
Right.
I feel like that might be a warranted category.
Yeah.
The made for streaming movie.
Uh-huh. Made for streaming. It just seems like, I mean, because Steppenwolf was fighting that fight for a while, it feels like, that he was trying to, or maybe I'm getting, it's another critic, I'm getting it wrong, but he was trying to distinguish between, like, real, like, or maybe he was expressing frustration with people trying to do this, but there was this discussion about, well, this Netflix stuff isn't television. Television is things were televised over broadcast television, and you know, it's a medium argument more than an art form argument. Like, is a photograph of a painting, do you judge that differently than the painting itself?
I feel like it should be a format argument, though.
Yeah.
Like, let's compare these as much apples to apples as we can, right?
Right.
It gets blurry, and we'll maybe talk about that in a second, but if I can draw out a story and get so much more nuanced and detailed in a 10-hour production than an hour and a half production, how are you going to ever compare those two?
Well, that's the interesting thing why television has kind of won this primacy over movies of late, because television used to self-handicap by saying, oh, shit, we can't tell these big, complex stories, maybe a two-parter or a season cliffhanger, because, Jesus Christ, someone tunes in the middle of season three, they're going to be like, what the fuck is this shit? I don't understand what's going on. I'm going to check out. Whereas movies could tell a 2 to 3 hour story, which was 2 to 3 times more complex than a television show could possibly do.
Right.
Television of recently has said, well, fuck that. We can spend 72 hours telling our story.
Yeah.
And now movies feel like, I mean, well, I, they're not
they're
thin.
Almost handicapped by their format, right?
Yeah. I mean, well, I mean, I say that movies are now movies are movies and television are just a different thing. But the knock on television is no longer it's a smaller screen for smaller people to go perform at.
Sure.
I don't that's what I'm saying. You're right. Like it's, it seems dumb to me that you would decide to arbitrarily split broadcast television from cable television from right. premium television
they're doing
from stream
the same
television.
Fucking thing
like the and, medium well, I mean, that it's this... transferred to your eyeballs and ear holes yeah. shouldn't now there's like I said but you could also make structural arguments where like well just Netflix doesn't have big studio promotion money and
right.
they can't get
that's
it
where
into
come back to the made for TV kind of thing
right yeah. Right, but that's not that. That's not even talking about the quality of the thing. It's the quality of the promotional engine behind
and
it.
And I just don't think that's true. I don't think there's the same divide between like made-for-TV movies as there is made-for-streaming TV.
Right.
You know, like made-for-streaming TV is a big fucking industry now. It's enormous.
Yeah.
And it's about to eclipse like made-for-broadcast television TV.
Yeah.
So. Like, I'm fully of the belief that if HBO didn't have to make their show for terrestrial TV, mm-hmm. they probably wouldn't.
Hmm.
They probably wouldn't. They'd just put it on their streaming service and say, hey, here's Game of Thrones.
Oh, no, totally. I think that you're...
They want to do that. They just can't.
We're witnessing, like, you know, I've said this for years now, that, like, there's some bean counter that has a yeah. scale in his office the second the revenue from HBO Go and HBO Now... eclipses that from the sweetheart deal they get from the cable companies,
mm-hmm.
they'll go streaming only. I mean, yeah. why wouldn't they maximize their profits?
No, everybody's moving that way. And it's like, and you can see that with the budgets, right? Like the TV that is on streaming services is getting much, much better.
The problem with that is it's not very customer friendly because... Like, cord cutters are quickly finding if you want to watch everything, you either yeah. have to pirate the shit out
no,
of stuff
this,
or you have to pay $5 for stars.com.
You know who wasn't surprised by that? You and I.
Yeah,
like, we have
right.
talked about this shit for years, how it just becomes this a la carte
right.
version of what you're already doing.
Right. Yeah, no.
You're going to pay just as much. It's not cheaper to cut the cord.
And,
it's more convenient.
And
don't act like it's cheaper, though.
And with the dissolution of the concept of net neutrality, it's going to get even worse.
Oh, yeah.
So,
oh, yeah.
Like, there's been this, like, 5-year cord cutter nirvana, but, and then that nirvana is largely fueled by piracy, too. Because people, like, everyone that I know is a cord cutter is a huge pirate.
Huh.
Everyone that I know that is like, a vociferous cord cutter pirates the shit out of stuff on a regular basis. Now, they might not think they are. Mm-hmm. They might have a jailbroken Fire Stick.
They're using popcorn
just
TV
magically
or whatever, yeah.
serves up this professional looking thing where it looks like it's all, but no, all that shit is pirated.
Yeah.
And that's
it's
like,
just more
this is, this
piracy.
Reminds me of a lot. Like, this is just stuff, just a shit we went through with music.
Mm-hmm.
Like you had Napster and fucking Kazaa. And then the music industry got wise and was like, well, we'll just make it to where people can download this shit for 99 cents. It's
right.
weird that movies are kind of already there. Maybe movies need to be 99 cents. They need to stop being $3.99 for high def.
Yeah. That's a tough sell when something costs you $200 million to make.
Well, I mean,
make your money in the luxury lounger reserved seating theaters.
Yeah.
And then make your profit on dollar streaming.
Right, right. Because...
Maybe so.
I don't know. Because, again, you know... I don't think you can make the piracy go away ever.
Sure, yeah.
Doesn't seem like that's been the course of human history. But also, I believe that, you know, we have to support art and artists so the art and art can get made. So, like, there's a middle ground here somewhere. I don't know. At $4 a pop, people are still pirating television shows and movies. So,
yeah, I mean, we just don't know what to do necessarily with, like, Amazon and Netflix movies yet. It's something we're thinking about for next year, I think, as far as like
this is something we're keeping our
mind.
We're keeping our eyes on it. Like
I'm gonna
first worry when I see a Netflix movie and think, oh shit, that's got real top five potential.
Yeah.
For movies or television shows.
Mm-hmm.
Hasn't happened yet. Ah, notable exceptions. So these are things that we anticipate people asking, why didn't this get talked about on the Baldies? And we have hopefully a pithy response. First up, Orange is the New Black. I watched the first three episodes of this, and it was a real-time telling of a prison riot in this women's prison that didn't feel at all like Orange is the New Black, and I just was out. I was just out, and I wasn't even too busy to do it. It's more just like it. I kind of was on the fence last year, and this year I'm just like, I'm done. And I don't see it getting in anybody's even top 20, so I feel justified that.
Yeah.
The Americans, I'm allergic to this television show.
And I haven't seen
just
it
like
in
you
like
can't tell
2 years,
a kid you can't tell a kid with peanut allergies, oh, just try the peanut butter fudge. It's so good. It's so right. It's so good.
Just try folding up the body and stuffing it in the suitcase.
It's delicious. I'm going to break out in hives and my ass will itch for a week, and I'm just not going to do it. All right.
I just dated the last time that I've watched The Americans.
Right.
By the way.
Right. Twin Peaks.
Ago.
I completely ran out of time.
This is my peanut allergy.
This is Jim's peanut allergy. I just ran out of time. Twin Peaks broke me. I was excited that I could get in because I thought it was like an eight episode season with like your standard 50-minute runtime, and it's like 16,
David
sometimes
Lynch
hour and a half long
standard.
Episodes and. Game of Thrones hit and I fucked that up because I really enjoyed. I did binge all or nearly all of the classic Twin Peaks series, and this is getting consistent top 10 buzz. I feel like it's combination
even
notable exception. It's one of our biggest misses. I know I couldn't get this guy to do it with me, but I had several passionate Twin Peaks people that I respect and admire that would have done it with me. And
who are already podcasters and probably would have been
already,
great at it.
Yep. I had some of the Shankles. I had the Shane Bowmans. I had a couple others that I was looking forward to doing stuff with, and it just got away from me.
Yeah, it hit like very soon after we did the Commission podcast on Twin Peaks, and you had started watching through the original series, and
I'm going to power
through 100 hours of Twin Peaks.
Yeah, and I did. I did. I powered through 30 hours of Twin Peaks, and then I got to like two or three episodes of the, and I'm going to watch it. It just isn't eligible for this Baldy because neither of us have seen enough of it to have an opinion on it.
Speaking of not having seen enough.
Mindhunter.
Yeah, Mindhunter. I watched the first 10 minutes of that, and I did not like what I saw.
Yeah.
It seemed like every other generic procedural, this time with the Negotiator. Okay, what is special about this show?
Right.
And I grant you, I did not give it enough of a chance.
Uh-huh.
But what I saw turned me off almost instantly.
Yeah, and I had a similar reaction. I watched the first episode, and it hit at the time at the part of the schedule where it would have had to really grab me by the nuts, to continue on, and I didn't. So,
but a lot of people talk about this like it did for them,
yeah.
And I don't.
I don't
understand it, but
I don't
something.
Like true crime. Like, you know, that's kind of like, and also if I do like true crime, like it's one of those things where it's an occasional taste, like. I really liked True Detective. It's not true crime, first of all, but that it kind of like scratched my itch for a good long while. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'm not going to defend it. It's just like these are the notable exceptions.
Yep.
It's a great. It's widely consensus top 20, even some top 10 pick. It just didn't grab us. We didn't cover it. Godless. Same thing. It came real late in the season. I was super busy. It looked good. I liked the concept of a female dominant cast in a Wild West setting. I love fucking Princess Mary from Downton Abbey. It had the
It's amazing for a female, a quote unquote female centered show, how non female centric this first episode was.
Did you watch the first episode?
Yeah.
Oh.
Eric this weekend said, hey, you need to watch Godless. It's awesome. So I checked out the first episode. It's only like a 7-episode mini series kind of thing.
Did you like it?
Limited engagement. Yeah, I liked it a lot.
Okay.
But I was shocked at just how male-centric it was.
Huh. All right.
You've essentially got one like,
it's all
lead
marketed
female.
As like women kicking ass in the West.
Maybe it gets. I think it's going to get more of that as the series goes on. But the pilot was definitely not that. the pilot was more the setup of here are.
I wonder if
the
it's kind of like
this
first episode of Fargo,
men.
Where like if you didn't know anything about Fargo season one, you would think that the dashing male sheriff was going to be the lead.
Right.
He's immediately killed, and then it's Molly's yeah. show from there on out. The Crown. This is about the life of Elizabeth the Second. It's right up my alley. I just haven't had time to watch it. Season 3 of Narcos I wasn't as interested in because I was already super personally interested into the Pablo Escobar stuff. I'd discovered that whole thing because I really liked Black Hawk Down and Mark Bowden, and then I read Killing Pablo, and I kind of and also one of my favorite Tom Clancy books is Clear and Present Danger, which is kind of a fictionalized account of the CIA fucking around in South America and the drug trade, and I was predisposed to that, and they went into season three was an entirely different, well, not entirely different, it was a different cartel from the Medellin cartel. I just wasn't as interested in it, but I've heard a lot of people say it's even better than the first two seasons because they got rid of, you know, blonde Barbie FBI agent and focused on Agent Pena, I believe is his name, which is Pablo Pascal. Is that his name?
Yeah,
Prince Oberon. And he was always the best part as far as the good guys in that show. So I need to give it a second glance, but I didn't see it in 2017. It's got some real blast from the past potential. Dark. Seen the first episode of that.
This came out just before the holiday break, and I totally could have watched it, but I saw the first episode too, and...
You don't like, because I thought it would really grab you in like a German existentialist. what's that fucking, not triangle, pie? No, not pie. The time travel movie where they're.
Primer?
Primer.
Yeah.
It had a lot of Primer vibe to it.
Yeah, I mean, it was an interesting setup.
It's like,
sure.
It's like a teenage German Stranger Things version of Primer, is what it felt like.
I don't understand the Stranger Things comparisons.
Young
honestly.
Kids in the woods fucking around.
I mean, if that's as far as you're gonna go, that's not why I like Stranger Things. Because it's young kids in the woods fucking around.
No, but it has that flavor. It's got like it's like there's, you know, like I think it and Goonies and all those shows about young people getting into over their heads and dealing with it and with their limited understanding and skill set and heightened sense of emotion. That's a genre.
I don't remember any of the Goonies having like their father commit suicide and that kind of stuff.
Well, you don't know what happened. You don't know how that real estate thing all shook down.
That's
if
fair.
If you don't think Sean Austin's dad didn't eat a gun, then when you got slapped at the taxes on those jewels, and then Mouth got some kind
jewels,
of crazy brain virus from holding that stuff in his mouth that was like, you know, 300-year-old corpse dust on it. Anyway, Dark.
Yeah, it was
so
an
you're not
interesting.
Interested in finishing Dark?
It's an interesting setup. I don't know. Maybe.
I feel like I got another 6 weeks before Bald Move gets really crazy, and I probably will see. I mean, I'm going to give Dark another 3 or 4 episodes. If it doesn't continue to grab me, then I'll be out.
Yeah.
Insecure. I really was high on the first season, Insecure. I just didn't have time to see the second season, which I've heard is excellent. Brooklyn Nine-Nine is a comedy that a lot of people love, and it's just a procedural comedy that I don't know, man. Like, every time I watch an episode with my wife, I enjoy it, but not in the way, like, I just, my patience for conventional sitcoms, I like sitcoms that are fucking weird and out there and kind of make me think about things, like the BoJack Horsemans and the Lady Dynamites and the Always Sunny, or something like Always Sunny, which is just consistently crazy fucking shockingly funny. Parks and Rec is about the only one in the last 10 years that was a conventional sitcom that I really dug.
Yeah.
So This Is Us, I don't know a fucking thing about this show. Every single time I watch a trailer or a commercial, it looks like a schmaltzy network dramedy, and everyone says I'm wrong, but yet my will to watch it just continues to drop. And I, you know, if you want to hate me for it, fine, I don't care about that show.
Yeah, I haven't seen it.
It's like The Good
three.
Wife. It's like, I don't know, any other really highly rated show that I just didn't. Modern
the
Family.
The Good Place probably should have been on this, because that was apparently like a really great show this year. that I just...
Shit, it didn't even make the notable exceptions list. I know. Double dumbass on us.
Well, we just forgot about
it. Halt and Catch Fire. Why did you let everyone down on this, Jim?
I'll let everyone except a certain person down and just take all the blame for it. It was my fault. I didn't have the will to see through a Halt and Catch Fire podcast this year. Even though last year was really great, and I hear this year was even better. It's a real shame that this is not in the drama category and that I have not seen this season, because I hear, like, it's the final season of the show, which it sucks that it's not going to get any recognition because I just didn't watch it, but what am I going to do?
Fear the Walking Dead. I heard from multiple people whose opinions I respect that this is the best zombie show that's ever been on television.
I need to hear that for like 3 years running before I'm even going to think about it.
Well, guess who's come for season four?
Scott Gimple.
Mr. Scott Gimple's taking over creative show running duties, so I don't have high hopes for its continued future, but I'm kind of the same way. Yeah. 1922 and Gerald's Game, I saw both of those. Jim didn't, and they were great. I thought they were good Stephen King adaptations of his different novellas, and I think 1922 is the better or scarier of the films. Holy shit, don't watch that film if you have any kind of fear of rodents or rats. But they just, I don't think they're,
well, they fall into the,
they were kind of lightweight
made
in that
for
they,
TV thing.
Yeah. They're well made, well acted, you know, well written, cause it's based on Stephen King, had great performances by Robert Greenbrier, whatever the fuck his name is. And Carla Gugino. And, who's the dude that's on the played the private or the detective on The Expanse, Thomas Jane.
Yeah,
really great performance by Thomas Jane in 1922. It's just, it was it's a Halloween scary time type of movie.
Yeah, and we don't,
it's a genre,
we don't
genre
have,
films.
That's the other thing that I guess we didn't talk about in the meta when we were talking about Amazon Netflix movies, is we don't have a category for movies that we didn't cover.
Yeah.
Right?
Is,
like,
yeah,
we have commissions and we have first run bald movies. It's not going to go in the drama category,
yeah,
because it's going to lose.
There's if we're talking about movies, you're right. Maybe these don't even belong here, because like if you're talking about movies, notable exceptions, movies, oh my God, there's like a dozen we probably should have watched and we didn't. And movies that we did watch and we shouldn't have. So let's slide on down to the next category, Blast from the Past, which we formerly called the Boomerang category. These are TV shows or movies that came out not in 2017, that we didn't watch until 2017, so they're not eligible for anything except for us saying, that was a pretty good thing. The original run of Twin Peaks. I did not watch it all. I used the different essential guides to watch essentially all of season one and about 8 episodes from season two. And I really enjoyed it, and I was amazed how they went from a kind of northern exposure feel of an FBI crime investigation show to an all-out existential dread horror film by the end of season two. How they bent that arc and made it work. And I had a lot of fun watching that show. And I'm glad people commissioned it, which kind of sparked that thing happening. My partner here did not feel any of those things.
No.
But I'm glad I got to
watch
it.
Oh, I felt
it.
The existential horror and dread.
That's what I said. Like,
not
one,
for the same reasons.
I want to live watch the season two finale just to see what the hell you think of it. Anyway, two, Death Note. Take it away. I don't even know what this is.
Oh, yeah. This is the anime from, what, 2006, 2007? My girlfriend got me into it last year, and we watched a lot of it. Not all of it though. So I don't know how it ends, but I guess the reason it's on here is because they made also a Netflix movie based on it this year, which I think we're going to talk about at some point. But I don't know. I like the concept, and I think the anime actually deals with it in a pretty interesting, nuanced way, which I don't typically think of anime doing, but, I'm an anime novice, so the stuff I've seen is probably not the best of anime. But yeah, Death Note for people who don't know, is a story where there's a book where you write somebody's name in it and they die. And you can define how they die, you can define when they die or what they do before they die, stuff like that. And this kid finds it. He's a high school student. And
oh, Jesus.
Yeah. And he's like a genius, too. And then he...
A misunderstood genius?
He probably becomes misunderstood eventually, or would say that he's misunderstood.
Well, yeah.
Once he starts using the Death Note. But no, at first he's just a pretty normal kid who sees a lot of fucked up shit in the world and thinks he can help.
Okay.
But yeah, I don't know. I think it's definitely worth a watch.
Okay. A Very Merry Christmas. So my wife and I went through and we watched a lot of Christmas stuff. That's kind of our thing to do during Christmas. That's everyone's thing to do. Mm-hmm. And we found this gem that I was dimly aware of from 2015. The conceit is Bill Murray is doing this Christmas extravaganza during the weird summer or the fall or the winter hurricane / blizzard that gripped New York City, and the power's out and no one's coming. And he's having a crisis, a career crisis. And it's set in this, like, dimly lit diner in his apartment. And there's a fantasy sequence in a studio where they get to do some larger, splashier stuff. And it's just a lot. If you have any affection for Bill Murray at all, you should watch this at Christmas time. It's a lot of fun.
It's one of the greats.
It also added the song, the R&B funk song, Santa Claus Needs Some Lovin'. To Cecily and I's Christmas music list.
It's lonely up there at the North Pole. My finger was hovering over the play button on A Very Merry Christmas.
You should. It was a good time
this season, but I did not watch it.
War Dogs.
Oh yeah, this is Jonah Hill's
Lord of War is what I assumed it was going to be.
Essentially, yeah.
And I liked Lord of War a lot.
That's a really good movie, and this one I would say is a little bit more fun than Lord of War. It's more of a comedy,
okay,
I guess, than
Lord of
War.
Is a dark comedy for sure.
This is too, but I think there are more laughs in it. And it's essentially the story about like this guy who is sort of down on his luck and trying to provide for his family, and he is not very good at sales, but he teams up with a guy who is and who kind of has all these contracts, but who is this total loose cannon, Jonah Hill.
Mm-hmm.
You might recognize him.
Mm-hmm.
And they get this like huge government contract to sell weapons, essentially, or deliver weapons. And they start like selling some guns on the side, and they make a lot of big mistakes to kind of lead them down the road of selling arms to people that probably they shouldn't be selling arms to, and being in scenarios that they would rather not be in.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you're looking for a. I don't. I mean, it's
what if there's
all
an arms
is
dealer
fun.
That goes to bed at night and think, "Man, I sold all the right weapons to all the right people this year."
No, nobody.
I feel good about every explosion and bomb and
right.
bullet that was fired.
Yeah,
I made money
I doubt
from.
It. Jonah Hill in this movie is as close as it gets to that, but I don't know. It's a good time. I really enjoyed it. And if you're looking for something in the vein of Lord of War, but a little funnier, I think War Dogs is it.
Judge Dredd?
Man, I watched the original Judge Dredd again. I did not like that movie. That's a bad, bad movie.
Surprised you hear that, to hear you say that, because if I recall, Rob Schneider is terrible in it. But I actually really enjoyed Stallone's Judge Dredd. The way he would like just chew out this, like spit out the words, like when he's talking to his gun, he's like, armor piercing, and he'd do so. I thought he made a really good Judge Dredd. It's kind of a Pierce Brosnan effect. Like he was a very, very good Judge Dredd that had a mediocre cash in attempt at the license.
Sure, yeah, I can get behind that assessment of it. I just think it's. Man, you need to go into that movie looking to make fun of a movie to have a good time, because that movie is bad.
Okay.
It's just bad. I mean, the dialogue is bad. The scenarios are bad and stupid. It's got Rob Schneider in it. It's all bad.
Do you think people would like the new Dredd as much if Judge Dredd didn't exist? Because I felt like I was...
So I had never seen the original Judge Dredd until this year.
Okay.
So like, I'm convinced
okay,
of it.
Okay, because I've often wondered that, because Judge Dredd, as much as I like... Stallone, was not a great movie.
No.
I don't think it's as bad as you're saying it is, but then again, it's been 5-6 years since I've seen it. Whereas I thought Dread was just amazing, but
Dread
was it because
awesome.
Of the contrast? Like, I was thinking that it would be this silly stuff, like, oh, shit, this is a deadly serious, well-done Judge Dredd movie. So you're the good control for that.
Yeah, I hadn't seen Judge Dredd before I saw Dredd.
And you really liked Dredd.
I really liked Dredd. I think it was more like a style thing. I think Dredd was really cool because of the style mostly, but it also didn't have a bad story. So,
do you think this makes it into the main show? I'm starting to think that the Boomerang is like Boomerang and Meta, like this is stuff that's probably not even going to be talked about in the actual award show, right?
I don't think we got to rank these.
Okay. Yeah, I hope not.
It's really tough to rank the
they're ranked the Boomerang stuff. It's just the order I typed them in.
Right. Yeah. And how are we going to rank stuff that you haven't seen this year and I haven't seen this year?
These are just things that didn't fit in that we saw, and I guess I don't know.
No ranking required.